Welcome to a new edition of the Famous Interviews with Joe Domino series. On this episode, we talk with Grammy-nominated producer, publisher, musician, educator, and author Rick Bleiweiss. Prior to moving to Ashland, Oregon in 2003, he spent his life in New York City in the music industry. He was a rock performer and songwriter, produced over 50 records, including a Grammy-nominated album, and was a senior executive at major and independent record companies, helping to launch the careers of Melissa Etheridge and the Backstreet Boys. He got his BA in film and MA in communications from New York University, and he completed an accelerated business leadership program at Harvard University. Since 2006, he has been an executive at Blackstone Audio, where he has acquired works by many incredible authors. Rick is a force with amazing stories and insights. Enjoy this interview.
Hi, Rick.
Hi.
Joe Domino, how are you, sir?
I'm good, thank you. How are you, Joe?
I'm wonderful. Hey, thanks for taking a minute out today.
Of course. My pleasure.
So, you know, I would think as a mystery writer, what we've lived through throughout the last 2 years has been probably one of the crazier things that we've lived through. How have you been doing since the COVID hit the planet?
Oh, I've been doing actually quite well. You know, writing is certainly a solitary profession in many ways. So, you know, that gave me a lot of time to write. And then, you know, I also am an executive at Blackstone Publishing, but I've always worked out of my house, which is about a mile and a half from the office. So I was able to do my job almost exactly the same way that I did it before COVID. My wife and I like being with each other. So it really, for us, it's not been hard. It's just stopped us from traveling. It stopped us from going to restaurants and things like that. But you know, in general, I think it's affected us way less than it's affected a lot of other people, and it mostly affected me because three people who are very, very close to me all died from it.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that's the most heartbreaking about this is the biological toll it's taken.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that I went to a lot of funerals myself, so, but I think from an artistic standpoint, I think that a lot of people, you know, even from a business standpoint, have gotten stronger because of this. There's been extra tech skills, and there's been an acquisition of things to make, hopefully, the artistic world a stronger organism as we kind of start reemerging.
Yeah, I think you could be right, and it's been good. I mean, for Blackstone, certainly it's been very, very good business years. You know, I think things that people consumed in their houses did very well. You know, I mean, there's always some kind of a silver lining to the darkest clouds, and that was one.
You have an interesting timeline here, and I'm curious, you know, I know you're in Oregon now. You spent a long time in New York City. Tell me where all of this began and how this dream of yours to be a creator and be an artist and an executive began.
Well, it actually started when I was extremely young, and I grew up in the New York City area, and when I say New York City area, part of the time in New York City itself, part of it in the suburbs. My parents were extremely forward-thinking, avant-garde people. They introduced me to literature, and they introduced me to music at the youngest age I can possibly remember, and a wide variety. I mean, in music, it was everything from classical music to Huddy Ledbetter and the Weavers and Miriam Makeba and Harry Belafonte and, you know, Pat Boone and Rosemary Clooney were playing on the radio, but that's not sort of where my parents' head was at. And I read unbelievable number of books as a child in mystery. I started with the Hardy Boys and just read everything I could possibly consume. So that kind of started me off. My dad and mother were both left-brain, right-brain balanced people, as I sort of am. My dad was an executive, and at the same time, he was a scientist who worked with Einstein and had over 200 patents, but he was also a painter. My mother was a singer and university administrator, so she kind of had both sides. And so I actually started when I was about 10 years old, when I got my first guitar, and I started writing my own songs. When I was 12, I wrote and published a sports newspaper. I wrote a play when I was 15. I studied filmmaking at NYU in college, and I wrote scripts to student films I was making, all the while playing in bands and writing songs. And I was always the leader of the band, so I was like doing the business for the bands, but I was also the bass player, the songwriter, the arranger. And it just continued that way through my career. You know, I produced over 50 singles and albums and had a Grammy nomination for one of them. Another was used as the basis of a Coca-Cola commercial. Another was used by the NFL. And at the same time, I was a senior executive in major record organizations breaking other artists. And then that just kept going. And when I left New York in 2003 and moved here to Southern Oregon, I just transitioned, if you will, from music to publishing. But I always was writing newspaper and magazine articles and columns my whole life as well. So I don't know. I was just always involved in creative endeavors.
So it's safe to say that there is definitely a merging of right and left brain for you. How does all of that work for you? Do they kind of intermingle and feed off of each other? How have you been able to kind of take those ids and compartmentalize or mingle them over the years?
I think mingle them rather than compartmentalize them is a better way of putting it. I was always very strong in marketing in the record industry, among other things, but marketing was one of my things. But to me, marketing was very creative. You know, I mean, I didn't just try to follow time-honored standard marketing things. I tried to find new marketing paradigms and new ways of marketing and introducing acts and soundtracks and things like that. And to me, that was very creative, yet it was totally business at the same time. So I've never really tried to compartmentalize it. I've always just tried to do what I do and hope that it was good enough.
You know, as a creator, we're only as good as the shoulders that we stand on, the giants that we stand on. What was there a particular book or album growing up that sticks out to you that really just, like, was something you always came back to?
Well, interestingly, in terms of an album, it was a Chet Atkins album. I fell in love with guitars. In fact, I fell in love with guitars when I saw a Gene Autry cowboy film where he was sitting on his horse, I believe it was called Champion, and he was playing an acoustic guitar and singing a song. And from that moment, I was hooked on music and guitars. And once I started studying guitar and taking lessons, I discovered Chet Atkins, and he was just like the most amazing guitar player I'd heard at the time. And I just, that just killed me.
You know, of all of these things that you've juggled and that you continue to juggle throughout your career, every day you wake up, what do you look forward to the most? What is it that you are the most excited about with what you get to do as being a creator?
Well, as being a creator, I think the thing I always look forward to, I'm sorry if this sounds stupid, is creating. I look forward to writing, and I look forward to joining the world of the characters I'm creating, because it's really an alternate universe in a way, because I've got my real life, and I've got my wife, and my dog, and my friends, and everything. And then I go into, in my mind, this alternate universe of these characters that I've created in my mind, and I live in their world. And that's outstanding. I love that. And then I also have a recording studio set up in my home office, and I still record and write music, so I love that too. So I'm just sort of waking up every day. And if we talk about creating, I'm also finding and signing authors, and I'm always looking forward to finding the next really wonderful manuscript that an author that I'm going to discover and be able to sign. So it's just sort of, and that to me is creating as well. Even though I didn't create their manuscript, I'm helping create their career. And so all of that combined, I just wake up and go, what's today?
You know, being here in Kansas City, I often, you know, Melissa Etheridge kind of arcs back into our world. When the Chiefs have done well, she's made songs. And I've always kind of thought about her career and how it exploded, and you had a hand in that. You know, the girl from Leavenworth made it big.
Yep.
Do you have a good Melissa Etheridge story?
I think I may have two of them. The first one really is that I was introduced to Island Records, where she recorded, because another record company that I had been with, a small independent, was failing. I was asked to sell off their artists. And so I got introduced to Bill Berger, who was the general manager of Island Records, and I brought him the acts that this other label had. And he said, I'm not interested in them, but I'm interested in you. I have an opening here for a senior executive. Would you be interested? So I took the job. He offered it. I took the job. I ended up being their executive vice president of sales. And he handed me a stack of CDs. And this was on a Friday. He said, I want you to go home. I want you to listen to these. And I want you to come back on Monday when you start work. And I want you to tell me which are your top two that you think we should be chasing, because we can't chase all of them. And these were all current contemporary CDs at the time. So I went home, and I came back on Monday morning, and I said, well, I've definitely got two favorites. And I've got to tell you, I don't remember what the second one was. I'm sorry, I just did too many years ago. But
yeah.
I do absolutely remember what the first one was, and I said to him, I think Melissa Etheridge, out of all of these, is the one we should be chasing. And so Bill turned to me and said, good man, I know why I hired you. I couldn't agree with you more. That was how we kind of, then between the sales department, Bill, and the promotion department, we just put together an entire game plan of in-store appearances, of concerts. We worked very closely with her manager, who was a great manager, Bill Leopold. I don't know if he's still her manager or not, but he was at the time, and he was open, as was Melissa, to everything that we came up with. And our promotion guys would not give up on radio, and they made it happen. We made it happen through in-store stuff. Our distributor, Warner Electric Atlantic, WEA Distribution, was into her, and they really made it happen. And that's kind of how the whole, it just started organically with her. The first time I ever saw her play was standing, playing on the floor of Nassau Community College without even a stage. And I just saw the reaction to all the people in the crowd. We just knew we had something. So that's one story. That's really how it kicked off. And, you know, we just grew her organically. And she was great. She would do everything we asked too. And then the other thing was, I would constantly be showing up at gigs and telling Melissa and her band how well the album was doing. And you know, it started 10,000, 20,000, 100,000, and then unbeknownst to her, one day we hit 500,000, which was a gold record. And so the president of Island came to me and said, listen, I've arranged that I want you to go to L.A. You'll have Melissa's gold record plaque with you. She doesn't know that that the album's gone gold yet. And she's taping a VH1 special at the, I believe it was at the Whiskey. And he said, I've arranged it with VH1 that they're going to tape you presenting the plaque to her, but she's not going to know that you're doing it until it happens. So I fly out to L.A., I go, I meet the VH1 guys, go into the club, I've got the plaque behind my back so she can't see it. There's a break in between the song she's recording that they're videoing, and they tell me, okay, go up there now. So I walk up on the stage, and Melissa, like, is looking in the other direction. She turns around, she sees me, and her exact words were, what are you doing on my stage? Now, we're friends, you know, but yeah. Still, you know, what was I doing? Well, fortunately, I had the plaque behind my back. I pulled it out, and all was forgiven.
That's wonderful. Oh, man, that's a great story. So speaking of Melissa Etheridge and the big names and the people that you've had influences on, who is your hero? Who's someone you admire?
Well, you know, there are a lot of people that I admire. I mean, there are some behind the scenes. There was a promotion man independent promotion man in New York named Herb Rosen, who unfortunately has passed away. But I admired him unbelievably, but the general public wouldn't know him. Of people that the public would know, I certainly admire Clive Davis. I worked with Clive. I worked for him for about a year and a half, and I worked with him for over a decade. And the man is just absolutely brilliant, probably has the best ears I've ever heard. I mean, steel trap mind. I just can't say enough positive things about how good a record man Clive is. Just unbelievable. But in the realm of recording artists, I absolutely am a fan of Gene Simmons. I worked with him and with Kiss, and the first time I met Gene, the Casablanca had just come to PolyGram. They had just bought Casablanca, and so I was asked to come. I was in marketing at PolyGram. It was called Phonodisc at the time, but immaterial. And I was asked to put together a marketing plan for one of Gene's albums. It was the one that had "I Was Made for Loving You" on it. I don't recall the title of the album. But anyway, so I listened to it, and I knew there was a smash hit on there, and I knew how well they had already been doing. So I put a marketing plan together, and I went to his manager, Bill Acoin's office, where Gene and Bill and I were to meet to go over my marketing plan. Well, I walk in, and I sit down, I introduce myself, and Gene turns to me and goes, "I know you have your marketing plan, but I wrote one up too. Would you mind if we go through mine first?" And I go, "Heck no, go for it." Well, I wrote a good marketing plan. He wrote a better marketing plan. And Gene and I became friends after that. We went to a Donna Summer concert together, whatever. And I use some of his business principles today in my publishing world. And I just unbelievably admire him for what he has been. He's one of the most incredible marketers I have ever met in my life, if not the most incredible.
I can tell you what, from somebody that just sees this from the outside, like with Clive, you know, you see people, big people in the recording industry that get introduced to the Grammys. Every time Clive is introduced, that place is loud, really loud, you know. Because sometimes with business people, there's kind of this rift between the artists and the executives. But, yeah, I mean, I remember when I saw Gene Simmons on the Conan O'Brien show pull out a coffin that you could make into a beer cooler, that guy was a genius. So it's like you drink beer out of this thing. It has all of the guy's autographed on it. And I remember even for a time there, I would go to his website, and he would personally like call or autograph or deliver something. And I thought, wow, you never see another person even think about doing anything like that.
You're absolutely right. I mean, no question. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, I think Kiss has merchandising items in over 3,400 categories. Not items,
wow,
but just categories.
They are marketing geniuses, that's for sure. For all the action that you've seen, and you could probably fill like an entire library of books, I'm curious, if you have a dream tonight and run into the younger version of yourself, when you were young and roaring and out there and figuring everything out, if you could give yourself a piece of advice based on all the wisdom that you've accumulated throughout all the years, what would that piece of advice be to your younger version?
Be less shy. I was somewhat shy as a child. You know, I once heard an actor being interviewed, and the actor said, you know, when I go on the stage, I become a different person. So who I am in my personal life has nothing to do with who I am when I'm in front of a camera, be it a TV or a film camera. And I was kind of that way. I mean, I was always enjoyed being on stage as a musician, etc. But I was pretty shy, and I was a loner to a great degree as a kid. And I think my advice to myself definitely would be get out there more, because I certainly did as I got older, and I regret the fact that I didn't do it more when I was younger.
If they make a movie about your life, who's going to be the actor? Who's going to play you?
I haven't the slightest idea. I'm sorry. I don't know.
That's fine. That's totally fine. That was kind of out of left field. I just figured that might be a fun one.
No, it is a fun one. I just don't know.
Right. Well, let's do this. You know, as somebody that loves music, if you could get into, we get off the phone, a DeLorean pulls up in front of your house, you can punch in the digits at any point in history and go see a performance and even meet the person afterwards. Who are you going to go see?
I'm probably going to not give you an answer you would expect, but it would probably be Beethoven. I just think it would be amazing to be around someone like him at that era when classical music was happening like that. In the more contemporary range, it probably would have... I don't know. You know, it's hard to say because I've had, and I put this in quotes, I've had private concerts by Jimi Hendrix where there were only two of us there. I had a private concert with Jerry Lee Lewis where there were only six of us there. I've seen and met and heard many of those that would be my answer, but I've already done that.
Yeah. You know, it's so interesting you say that because in my other incarnation as the jazz radio host, this week the first tune I picked was from a pianist up in Washington named Lenny Marcus, and a lot of his music is used on the Weather Channel and like national interludes when they're showing weather. And he has a new album called When a Door Opens, and he pays respects to Beethoven, and he explained that Beethoven may have been the first jazz musician. He was really one of those guys that kind of kicked through convention and did things in a way that no one had ever seen before.
Right.
And I find it interesting that you say that and that it kind of coincided because I literally groomed that show for this week and I thought a lot about that. You know, it's weird how things kind of happen. It's like, are your ears burning? Yeah, you know, this is why. So that's kind of wild. How do you want to be remembered? You're a prolific cat. You've done a lot in so many realms. You've touched so many lives, seen so many lives. When you sit back on the easy porch, you know, when maybe you'll never retire. You seem like the type that will keep going and going until you can't anymore. But when you get to some kind of point of solace, how would you like the world to remember what you did to it?
Well, I think first and foremost, I'm going to take... You know, being a father, grandfather, out of the mix. I'm now going to not talk about that, but I'll talk more in the business and creative realm. I think first and foremost, I want to be remembered as someone who was a mentor and helped people and was always there for people when they needed someone to be there for them. Mm-hmm. Then after that, I would just like to be remembered as someone who was very creative and very good at what they did. I'd love to be remembered as a writer and a songwriter, and you know, I have no idea what I'll be remembered for, but certainly the people skills probably is at the top of the list, and the writing and performing second.
So everyone out there has a perception of you, your family, your friends, your fans, business associates, but ultimately you live your life. You
right.
have a perception of you. Who do you think you are?
I think I'm a person who cares about other people, who is easy to get along with. I think I'm a person who's very creative and kind.
So my final question to you is this. Of all of the things that you've done and accomplished and been in your life that you'll continue to be, what are you the proudest of? What do you sometimes just lean back and say, wow, that happened?
Even though I've done a ton of things with very, very well-known people, I think at the moment, other than the book, the Pignon Scorpion book that I've written, that's getting phenomenal response, which I'm extremely proud of. I think it would be the experience I had with a group that I produced called the Gary Tom's Empire, and I did a first record I did with them. I produced, co-produced. Was a record called 7654321 Blow Your Whistle, and it was in the disco era, in the very early days of the disco era. I had the song presented to me as a rock and roll song. I heard it immediately in my head as a disco song, got together with Gary and his group, It ended up being the record that actually popularized whistles and discotheques. It went to number one on the disco charts, I believe, top three on the R&B charts. I think it went to 40-something on the pop charts. It was gold. And we went on to have 9 consecutive chart records. They were on Soul Train. They were on Dick Clark's American Bandstand, whatever. And I personally broke the record because I brought acetates around to mobile DJs and to Tony G at the Copacabana and broke the record before it ever got signed to a record label.
Wow. Rick, man, this has been wonderful. And I want to, before we depart here, I want you to tell everybody the best place to go to for all things Rick, to see anything that you've done and that you're doing. Where can they go and how can they find out more?
My primary website is rickbleiweis.com. I have a website that's sort of geared toward my music. There's Rick Bleiweis, M-I-S-C, like miscellaneous.com. And I have a YouTube channel, which has a lot on it, including a show called Chapter and Verse, where I interview best-selling authors giving advice to aspiring authors.
Rick, hey, man, it was great to get to know you. Thank you for opening up your world a little bit with me. I appreciate it.
Oh, I appreciate the opportunity, and thank you.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to another famous interview with Joe Domino, where we cover the world of art, literature, and music around the globe. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino in the iTunes Store. You can see them on the Neon Jazz YouTube channel. And for everything Joe Domino related, go to joedomino.com. And when you're there, you can kick in a little bit to the cause here at Patreon or PayPal. Until next time.